Welcome to Attached, a platform for adding breadth and depth to everyday living. I'm Yaakov Danishevsky, and this is the conversation series focused on my book. In each episode, I invite a special guest to discuss the topic of a particular chapter and how it relates to our lives. Welcome to another Conversations episode. This time I am very excited to have Rabbi Chaim Marcus joining me, a longtime Rebbe and somebody I've learned a lot from, despite never actually formally overlapping in any context, just one of those people that I met along the way and connected with very, very quickly. And I think that Rabbi Marcus is really one of the types of people that people feel that way about. I don't think I'm unique in feeling that I was able to connect very quickly, which is why Rabbi Marcus is the person that I would love to have a conversation with about chapter two in the book, which is really about relationships and relationships that are about bonding and connection and feeling a sense of warmth and closeness. So thank you so much for making the time to be here with me.
Really, my pleasure. My zechus. Got to catch up another time, as we said.
Yes, so much to catch up on. So just a very quick synopsis on chapter two of the book, which opens up by talking about the very well-known scene in the Torah, scene, if you call it such, of Moshe encountering the sneh, the burning bush. And the imagery there of Hashem appearing to Moshe in the sneh has so much, of course, to learn from and to understand. And one aspect, one medrash that I focused on is the idea that specifically the thorns, which represent pain and challenges, don't go away from Hashem's presence represented or embodied by the fire. The fire does not consume the thorns. The Torah specifically makes a point to say that. But the point being that Hashem is saying to Moshe, I'm here with you in the thorns. And to me, that really speaks to what I'm trying to put out there in this book, which is the relationship itself is the healing. The relationship itself is what we're looking for. And not so much necessarily the quick fix. Of course, we would love if Hashem takes away the thorns in our lives. And anybody who's experiencing thorns, of course, davens for that and wishes for that. But without that, Hashem's presence in our lives, both in the thorns and in the celebrations, are really what we're trying to do in our Yiddishkeit, in our Jewish lives. So, Marcus, I appreciate you making the time to do this and would love to hear how that resonated with you and what thoughts you'd like to share.
So, Rav Yaakov, I think that chapter really sets a very, very important tone for the whole book of what a relationship really is. Because, as you've pointed out throughout the Sefer, relationship doesn't mean that everything's always rosy. Relationship doesn't mean that everything is always beautiful and everything is also working out the way that you want it, right? The relationships we have with a spouse, the relationship we have with our children, relationship with other people, even though they might be great relationships, it could be fraught with the ups and the downs, the mountains and the valleys and the pain. But especially, I think that with everything that the Jewish people have gone through over the past century, you know, we're having this conversation now in the period of Sfiras HaOmer, reflecting upon Lag BaOmer last week, even what the day Lag BaOmer now means after 2 years ago, and, you know, weeks before that on the Yom HaTzmaot and Yom HaZikaron and the Yom HaShoah. You know, as a believing Jew, I think we recognize it doesn't mean that everything is going to be perfect in life when we have a relationship with God. You know, but I think it's really encapsulated in one of the brachos that we say every morning. I often say, I've said it many times in Shira, I think it's my favorite blessing to say every day. It's Sha'asa Li Kol Tzarkei, that God has done everything that I need. Meaning, what does that mean? You know, someone recently asked me if I can recommend a book to work on jealousy. That's what someone reached out to me about. Is there a book that you commend, Rabbi, that I could work on jealousy? And I shared with her that saying this blessing every morning, you know, jealousy is when you look at what the other has and you look at a life of another and you say, you know, why can't I have that life? And when we take that step back and recognize that God is the one in control, and as you point out in the book, in the second chapter, that God is walking along with us and God is setting the stage for us, it doesn't mean it's going to be to our liking, right? It doesn't mean that it's going to be very comfortable. And I shared with this person, I said, you know, every morning, just focus on that bracha, on that blessing. Don't just run through that one. really meditate. And whenever we have challenges in life, and then we see that other whose life looks, you know, so much more picturesque, so much more perfect than the things that we're struggling with. Sha'asa li kalsarki means that God is the grand artist, the great master who loves us, who cares about us, you know, something you focus on a lot, which I think is very important, but at the same time helps us recognize through the avoda, through trying to connect, that walking together with Hashem doesn't mean, kal David Rahman l'tavave, that anything God does is for the best, doesn't mean the way Chaim Marcus or Yaakov Denishevsky perceives the best. And I think that's very important to realize. It's a certain sense of humility, hachna, that we have to be able to enter into such a relationship. Because most of the times, right, when we go into a relationship, when you think about how relationships begin, it's about how that other person makes me feel, right? And I think that only when you commit in a marriage and you get into a deeper loving relationship, and certainly relationship with kids, right? There's a lot of pain in those relationships as a parent. You know, I don't think kids realize it. That's when your kids become parents. They're like, oh, now I understand what my parent went through. You know, I think this is
my father actually, speaking of parents and that bracha, my father has an amazing diuk in that bracha.
Yeah.
That they could have said, Sha'asa kol tzarki, Hashem made all my needs for me. And that would have been enough. It would have communicated the same point, right? Sha'asa kol tzarki.
Right. All my needs.
That Hashem made all my needs, because tzarki already is tzrachim sheli, my needs.
Right.
So Hashem set up all my needs, but it's sha'asa li kol tzarki.
Beautiful.
So it's not just that Hashem made all my needs, but Hashem made for me all
Beautiful.
My needs.
Beautiful. I like it. Shkoyach. I'll put your father on that.
Yeah. Dr. Denishevsky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I think that's very important that people, you know, I think, you know, Rav Soloveitchik speaks about this in a number of places. You know, you quote the Rav a lot. You know, Rav Soloveitchik speaks about it in a number of places where, you know, we don't believe religious life means, you know, the serenity of the ripples in the pond and everything is so calm and everything is so good. You know, religious life is fraught with tension. It's fraught with struggle, not necessarily easy, you know, and that's, I think, just a reflection of real life.
Yeah. So here's, I actually have a question for you on this. I'm curious, because the way I always read those pieces from Rav Soloveitchik, and the first point that I think you were making, I've for a long time I've struggled with understanding what this means, because oftentimes you'll hear people bring up this idea of let's call it intellectual humility, you know, or emuna, that I can't see how this is kultsarki or li kultsarki, but I can believe that it is, and because of that, I should be able to look at everything as just being for the best. And the approach to everything is like, this is for the best. Well, and in a sense, the way that I hear that sometimes is in a way that it sounds like a little bit of a sugarcoating, and in a way that does feel like maybe it's using religion as a way to make everything feel like it's perfect. And what Rav Soloveitchik really talks about in these pieces, I think that you are mentioning, is that in our current unredeemed pre-messianic state of being, we don't really get to fully experience that yet. So is there a way that we kind of square the two?
Right. So I'll tell you, there is certainly, I think you're hitting on to a very important point that I think is really out there in the world today. And there are movements that project this notion that everything is perfect. If this is the way Hashem wants it, then it's all good, and you know, we're not going to be upset with anything. But you know, as Rav Yitzchak Breidowitz, Shlit of Ar Sameach, pointed out recently, one of his shmuzin, like, imagine if Sarah Imenu had that perspective. Imagine if Rivka Imenu had that perspective, or Rachel Imenu had that perspective. They would have stopped davening. They would say, Hashem, you know, that's it. What about Moshe Rabbeinu, the Avon Avin? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu save Davin 515 tefillos to get into Eretz Yisrael? Why didn't he just say, you know what, Hashem, this is it. This is what must be my fate, and I accept it. No, we have to do our hashtadlus, meaning we're in a world, and I think that the point that you're making is a very important point, that we live in a broken world. We live in a fractured world, and that's what we have to deal with. I remember one time speaking to my Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, asking him, like, I don't get it. Isn't it ideal that we should all just sit and learn in Kollel every day? If isn't that really the ultimate good? And he said, that's not the tafkid of this world. That's the next world. That's what the Rambam describes in Hilchos Malachim, the next world's about. Here, it is, by definition, a world of tension, that world of toiling. And I think you're correct that when, I think that's, you know, what the Rav is comparing between the halachic man and the homo religiosus, that I think out there in the world today is a lot of homo religiosus, and it's all good, it's all good. Read Tehillim, David HaMelech, the Im Zemir Shel Yisrael. He struggles with Hashem at times. He struggles with what he has in life. And I think we have to recognize it's okay to be there. You know, I think sometimes, whether it's for our kids in schools and even for adults, you know, it's like, it's not okay to struggle. It's not okay to feel pain. And we have to say that everything is perfect. Everything is perfect because it's from Hashem, but it doesn't mean that we're just supposed to say, okay, everything's perfect and that's it. I'm giving up. I'm not going to work hard. You know, I think it's like the line they say from the Baal Shem HaKadosh, the Chizkiyahu Aleinu, that when the Baal Shem said everything could be used in Avodas Hashem, so someone said to him, really? How can Apikar says Kfira be used in Avodas Hashem? And he said about Yenim, when you see someone else struggling, don't just say, oh, just have bitacha and it's all for the good. What you're suffering for is that Hashem wants you to suffer this. No, you know, but it's the same thing even in our own lives, you know, right? Sometimes the perspective we have to others is the perspective we need to ourselves. Sometimes the perspective we have about ourselves, we need to share with others. We need to project it onto others. You know, you have to know when to do what. But I think that's also in our own life. We have to recognize this. And I think definitely there is a propensity of certain movements, you know, in the Torah world to just, everything is good. Everything is good because it's from Hashem, but it doesn't mean that I perceive it as good. It doesn't mean even Hashem wants me to perceive it as good, you know?
Right. So there's a Baal Turim that Rabbi Yehuda Teretzky showed me years ago. That always stuck with me, that by Shifra and Pua, when they save the Jewish babies, so it says Vayas Lahem Batim, right? So that he made for them houses, right? So who's he and what does it mean, the houses? So there's many Mefarshim, right? So most of the Mefarshim explain it in a way that it's referring to some sort of reward given to them, that either he is Hashem and Hashem made them houses, meaning legacies, dynasties, or something else, you know, riches, something of that nature. But there's a Baal Turim that says it's actually referring to Vayas is Paro, he is Paro, and Batim means jail. He put them in jail.
Well, yeah.
And the point being that sometimes you do the right thing and it's good enough because it's the right thing, not because there's some great, you know, reward that comes with it, but that the right thing is because it's the right thing, like the Lashon, the language of the Rambam, of Osem Emes Mipnei Shehu Emes. Visof Hatov Lavo.
Right, absolutely. I mean, look, we're a week after Lag BaOmer, right? And, you know, just think of Rabbi Akiva. Think of Rabbi Akiva's end. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara Menachos, struggles with exactly this point. Zo Torah v'zo Schara. He's one of the greatest Tanam of all time, one of the greatest Darshei Torah of all time, the Dagon. You know, he's able to understand the secret of the crowns, the Osios to Rabbi Akiva, some of the deepest Kabbalahs from him. But yet, look at what happened to him. Look at what happened to Rabbi Akiva. You know, and again, the serenity with which he faced that, it was about the desire to be Mekadosh Shem Shamayim, the Rabbim, in that way. It wasn't that he wasn't in pain, right?
Yeah. So it seems to me that we, in general, there's a lot more people talking about this type of approach of having real relationships, like we're discussing, relationships that are about the bond. They're not just about some, you know, that everything's going to be perfect and sugar-coated, but it's about actually having the relationship. And yet at the same time, it confuses me because it seems that we're also all profoundly struggling with this more. So somehow it feels that we're talking about it more and there's more going in that direction, like progress in that direction. And yet at the same time, it also seems that we're kind of having a harder time with it. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that. Maybe that's why we're talking about it so much, because we're struggling more with it.
With it vis-a-vis a relationship with Hashem or in general?
Well, I'm curious what you think. I think both, but I'm curious what your thoughts
are. So I'll tell you, Yaakov. I'll give you a little insight that when I meet with every chassan and kala before I perform their wedding, before Masad or Kiddushin, so what I try to share with them is something that, you know, please know it's totally normal 3 to 6 months into your marriage, if you say, oh my God, I need to get out of this. I made the biggest mistake. I made the biggest mistake in my life. And why did I share that with Hassan and Kalis? Only one time when Kalis stood up, said, I can't believe he said that, literally stormed out of my office. Literally, she got up and just ran out of my office. I was still Masada Kiddushin for them. It worked out, Baruch Hashem. They're happily married. But she did say thank you to me towards her Shana Rishona, because you remember when she got into the first big fight with her husband, and she's like, oh my God, that's what Rav Chaim said was going to happen.
It took 3 to 6 months. That's pretty charitable.
No, I don't say when, but I tell them it's normal. And why? One time I was zocha to drive Rabbi Dr. Abraham Jatorsky, he's chassid in Elena somewhere. And we were in the car for a solid hour. I mean, I tried to take a detour, make it 5 hours, but you know, he had to get somewhere. So I took him there. It took about an hour. And I asked him, Dr. Tversky, can I be a little chutzpahdik to you? And he said, sure, Rabbi Marcus, what? I said, you recently published a book about the first year marriage. You're an addiction specialist. What do you know about the first year marriage? He started cracking up. He said, I love that question. I was waiting for someone to ask me that question. So he said, actually, his wife, his second wife, was a marriage therapist, and they were working together. But he said, Rabbi Marcus, because, again, this story probably happened 18 years ago or so, maybe 17 years ago, 18 years ago. And he said, Rabbi Marcus, you should know, to the Haredi world, to so much of the black hat world and the Strimal world, I represent mental health. I come, I'm a Rebbe Shekind, my brother's a Rebbe. Do you know how many messages I get a week from young Kalis, from the mother of a Chassan, from a young Chassan, saying, my child is in this horrible marriage, in the beginning of marriage? He said, no one's explaining to our young Chassanim and Kalis that marriage is hard. And again, think about it. We're talking 18 years ago. This is before Gottman took off in the firm community, right? This is before all of these trends. People aren't telling our Chassanim and Kalis that it's hard. It's like Disney princess syndrome. Get married happily ever after. And he said, we need a frank discussion about this. So I he had spoken to his wife. And said, I just want to put something out there explaining to people how hard it is. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, in parenting also, I think we're seeing this, that people understand deep and meaningful relationships doesn't mean that you always are in like this Shangri-La, in this blissful state with each other. Sometimes, you know, I remember Rav Schechter one time in Shlir, Rav Schechter Shlita, one time in Shir mentioned, just because a couple screams at each other doesn't mean they're not in love. It doesn't mean they're not, you know. So sometimes couples that fight, that's a very healthy thing. That's an expression of love, that they can express their feelings like that, and they can feel, you know, that they're safe with each other. I mean, it's interesting. You to be able to fight means that you're safe with each other. You know, right. So I think this is a very important issue. But I think, Baruch Hashem, the Jewish community is leaps and bounds ahead of where we were even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because there's a lot of talk now. I was recently at a Gouda Mental Health Professionals Conference not so long ago. Mm-hmm. And there was a panel discussion on I don't know that there were statistics on it, but I guess what they were calling the significant rise in early divorces in the Frum community.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, I was told, you know, off the record, so I'm not even going to say which community or whatever, that there are a lot of psukim going around in that community of young divorcees allowed to uncover their hair because it's becoming so common. And young divorcees are like, after a marriage of 3-4 months, like I've still, and major postcard in that world are being matirit, where, you know, you read Moshe's Tshuva, and, you know, we're not getting to an halachic discussion now, but it's very interesting. By Rav in that community told me, Rabbi Marcus should only know how widespread such a psak is now.
Wow.
And I think that's part of the issue. I think that's part of the struggle that's going on. You know,
that there isn't the awareness that it's going,
meaning it has to be even more. Meaning, mm-hmm. you know, I remember when I taught in Berea High School for 19 years, I taught seniors in Berea High School for 19 years. Every year, was it every other year, they would bring in Shalom Task Force and talk to the juniors and seniors together just about, you know, shalom bayis, what that means, what it doesn't mean, you know, things to be aware of. And I think that type of education is important for the kahalas, but also for the chasanim, you know, and also for new parents. And as the parents, as the kids get older and older, you know, there's so many programs for parenting. And I think we have to understand that, that relationships aren't always smooth, as you said. I think the image of the Sneboer Ba'esh is beautiful. It really is. You know, the burning bush, that the thorns are there, but the heat is there and the light is there. And meaning Hashem is saying, Imo Anochi B'tzara, that I'm going to be there in that pain with you. And we have to know that the pain doesn't mean bad. Rav Noach Weinberg, right? He would often talk about this. You know, what's the opposite of pleasure? Opposite of pleasure is no pleasure, not pain. That's what he would often talk about. Or it's a big Rav Noachism. You speak to the old Eish Chevra. The opposite of pleasure is no pleasure. It's not pain. Pain is something else. And pain could be a very important teacher at times.
That slightly reminds me of the Piazetzna in, I think it's in Savaziras, right? In his diary about how people yearn to feel. People want to feel, right?
Rav Yaakov, I mamish shared that. I'm a Rebbe in Heichal HaTorah now. Oh, I mamish shared the piece from Savaziras this morning.
Wow.
This morning, we're doing Rav Itchemeyer. B'yam Darkecha, and we're in Tefillah, when he talks about the inability for us to feel. And I had we start every day with some B'yam Darkecha, and we had a very real conversation. Mamish on that piece in Savaziras. Such hashgacha, you mentioned it. Mamish on that piece in Savaziras this morning. About people just not being open with emotions, not knowing what it is to really feel. I spoke about, you know, watching the horror movies or doing these crazy thrill-seeking things or... You know, I remember a statistic, and this was already years ago in California, when they interviewed 1,000 teens who were smoking marijuana. What's the reason that you smoke marijuana? The overwhelming majority, over 90%, something like 92%, said boredom. Boredom. Mm. They're just so bored. And this lets them feel something, right? This creates some type of feelings. That's a very big issue. And when kids are so anesthetized to their feelings because they're in front of the screens so much, you know, and that's a real struggle today, for sure. I think that and the parents are also in front of the screens so often. You know, we're in front of screens right now, but this is a dibuk haverim. This is dibuk haverim from afar.
So how do we get a little better at this, right? So, you know, in that same chapter, I also talk about the Baal Shem Tov's teaching about Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, which is really, you know, the same inyan, right? The same idea of that the Baal Shem Tov teaches that mitzvah is not only a language of commandment, but it's also a language of connection from a spin on what the shoresh of the word is, tzevet and yitzaveh as in connection. And so the reward, Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, the reward of the mitzvah is a mitzvah, meaning the reward of connection is connection. And what we're really looking for is to build these deeper connections, to really be able to look at another person, to see another person, and to see them as a person and not as a source of something that they can give you, right? So to see a person working in a toll booth and to see them as a person, to give a little bit of an out of the box example, but one of the most striking places or ways that this comes up a lot for me in my work is one of the areas I work specifically with is sexual addictions. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes part of the recovery for, and this is relevant, you know, for many men, even if there's not a sex addiction going on, but it's more acute and pronounced when there's a real issue with sex addiction. One of the big pieces of recovery is to start to see women as people.
So I'll tell you.
And it's one of the ways that that addicts have to break down that instead of seeing this person as they can give me something, they can do something, they're actually a person. And you know, that again, that's a provocative example, but I think we all struggle with that in a variety of ways, right? When we go to a store and there's someone behind the cash register, and we go, you know, and even our children, right? We can and our spouses and whoever it is, and ultimately also the Ribono Shel Olam, we look at Hashem as, you know, just the dispenser of whatever goods we need, as opposed to looking at all these people as people, or Hashem as the being, and engaging in a relationship with them for being who they are and being the person that they are, the soul that they are.
So first, based on what you first said about the sex addiction, if I could tell you a brief story. When I was learning in Yeshivat Haratzion by Rav Lichtenstein, so the summer before Eretz Yisrael, I had already worked in HASC, Camp HASC, Camp for Special Needs Children, as a junior counselor. Coming out of early admissions in YU, I was 17 years old. And I remember that I went to Rav Lichtenstein, Shana Aleph and Gosh, said, Rebbe, you know, I was asked by my division head to come back to Camp HASC. Am I allowed? And he said, we have Zman until Rosh Chodesh Av. I don't know why the Americans think that the Zman ends in the middle of June. He said, you have to stay here. I said, okay. So I told the division head, I'm not coming back. He said, understand, you are going to be a veteran counselor. We were going to give you three rookies as your co-counselors. If you don't come to camp, it means we might be able to accept fewer campers. Just understand that. So I went back to Rav Lichtenstein. I said, Rebbe, this is the situation. He said, then it's Yefshir Lassus Al Yecherim. Then Chaim, you're allowed to leave to be able to go work in camp, to do that chesed. I said, Rebbe, but you know, Camp HASC is very co-ed. You know, I don't know, just from that, I didn't think about that coming out of early admissions year. I had an older brother who was working there. And so I didn't even think about it. Also, I was so young, it just like wasn't Baba Cheshbon at all. Now I'm after Shana Aleph, you know, they're going to be, you know, Rebbe. And so he said, Chaim, have you ever had like real co-ed interactions? I said, I went to old boys school, Rebbe, from kindergarten through till Eretz Yisrael. He said, you know, I have to tell you, is it a type of camp where you have to come out with a girlfriend by the end of the summer? I said, no. So he said, then I think it could be a good thing for you. I said, why? He said, because if you're totally segregated from members of the opposite gender, he said that you could stop viewing a woman as a person and see them as a sex object. He said, basically, a gavra becomes a cheftza.
Right.
That's what he said.
Right.
He said, so
right.
He said, I think that to a certain degree, it's healthy that you should go and wow. and have those interactions, which again, if you appreciate who Rav Lichtenstein was, that's just a very big statement and appreciation yeah. of a person like that. But just in terms of the relationships in general, I think a lot of it, you know, Revolbi addresses in Ali Shor and Chelak Aleph when he says, you know, and this, it's, I think, this exact point when he says that people sometimes view Yiras Hashem and Chesed as like working in an inverse way. You know, the more Yiras Shemayim you have, the less nice you are to people and the less concerned you are about people, right? Whatever, in certain milieu, certain social views, that, you know, more about firmer than less nice, right? But the truth is, Revolbi says that Yiras Hashem and real Chesed come from the exact same point. Hakaras hazulos, being able to see outside of yourself. And I think when we talk about developing real deep relationships, the major nekuda, the major point is what the number one teaching that I share in my shul all the time. If you have people who've been in Springfield for a while, what's the thing Rav Chaim repeats more than anything else? It's from the Akhtama of Nefesh Chaim. When Rabbi Itzel of Elazar says, Margil b'fume davi, the pearl, what was always in my father's mouth, he would tell his Talmidim, he would tell the family, know that you're not created for yourself. Lo nivra ha'adam ela laho el achrini, that a human being is created only to help other people. Meaning, are we outward focused or inward focused? Because exactly as you just said, Rabbi Yaakov, when you're inward focused, what can this person do for me? So that person is just my toll collector. That person is just the cashier. That person. But if you're outward focused, you're constantly looking for opportunities to talk to people, opportunities to interact, and opportunities to see how you can help another person. Meaning that's what I think Judaism is really about. It's about being outward focused. It's about being l'sakin olam ba'ol malchus shakai. How can we be marbek v'ot shemayim ba'olam, right? It's in this week's parasha Bamidbar. But again, we're not going to go so far afield. But I think that you're hitting upon one of the biggest issues of the narcissism that we have in terms of how to develop it with Hashem. You know, so that's a different thing. I found at the beginning of COVID, I was doing a tremendous amount of hold handling, proverbial hold handling with a lot of people in my kehila, because everyone's anxiety level was shooting through the roof, making Pesach by themselves. Kids are at home. And I'll tell you, something that I recommended time and time again to people was a teaching from Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter. Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter is one of the Gedolei Kabbalah, right? Rosh Hashiva, one of the Rosh Hashivas of Shari Shamayim, from the old, authentic Yerushalmi Breslov community in Yerushalayim, and like the back of Meir Sharim, you know, the Beis Medrash opposite Toldos Aharon or Baralas. And it was when I was living in Eretz Yisrael, he was the mohel for my son, Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter. I would go to him often. And my oldest daughter, who was like three at the time, had some breathing issues, and I had a rush with her from Beit Shemesh to Hadassah and Kerem in an ambulance. And I was facing like a lot of anxiety, a little OCD in terms of going and counting her breaths all the time. And you know, went to speak to psychologists about it, but I also went to Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter. And he told me, listen, he said, you have to speak to someone. I said, I am. He said, good. He said, I want to give you a little etzah. He said, every day, say a few prakim of Tehillim, not a lot, a few prakim, two, three. Pick one or two psukim from the prakim you say that speak to you. And then throughout the day, whenever you have time, just repeat phrases from those psukim. Whenever you're just walking and your mind is not focused on anything, there's nothing that's really occupying your mind, just say those phrases over and over. And he said, David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim with the soul of all the Jewish people, right? The lave of the Melech encompasses all of the people. And he said, so when David HaMelech, the Shlach HaKadosh, talks about this, also he quotes, he actually has a little kuntris about the importance of saying Tehillim. And when David HaMelech wrote Tehillim, each and every one of us can connect to it in different ways. And he said, when you find those phrases that speak to you, just say them over and over, like to be in a meditative trance. And I did it for quite some time. And it didn't necessarily mean everything was okay, but you mamish felt. I remember one time we came into New York, brought my daughter to see a doctor in Mount Sinai. And I remember walking down a block in Manhattan, West Side, West End Avenue. And I remember just saying those phrases from Tehillim from that day over and over, and just feeling that whatever's going to be, the Eibushter's with me. Exactly what you're talking about in your book. Exactly the ketah that you have in that second paragraph, in that second chapter. Mamisha's feeling whatever's going to be. HaKadosh Baruch Ki Ata Imadi. Ki Ata Imadi. Lo Ira Ra. I'm not going to fear the bad. It might be bad. What comes might be bad. Right? Yeah. But Ki Ata Imadi, I'm not going to fear it in the same way. I'm not going to have the anxiety in the same way, because I know you're with me. And I told so many people at the beginning of COVID, those first 6 weeks, to do the Tehillim, and if you don't have time, but also just hispodidus, a little quietness. I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, people neo Hasidism and all these different things, I think it's just a way of really developing a meaningful, authentic relationship with Hashem. So much gets thrown into routine and habit. We have to break out of that a little bit. And I think that this is how we do it. This is how we do it, by talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a very real way, you know, not getting necessarily overly philosophical. You know, Chaim Shmuel Levitz, last week's parsha, Bar Kosai, one of the Shmuzin on Bitachon, he quotes from Rabbi Yeruchim, the great Mashgiach, Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz Zatzal, who told him that when you're talking about Bitachon publicly, don't get all philosophical, just simply talk the simple ideas of Bitachon. And he said, that's how most people are going to be able to connect Bitachon. That's how they have to connect to it in a very real way. It has to be real to them. So I think a lot of it is being outward focused. And I think that's the secret of Chabad. I think that's what the Rebbe was all about, being outward focused. And I think also just vis-a-vis the Ribbono Shel Olam, having real conversations. And really, you know, the Tehillim, the Ketah, taking a few phrases of Tehillim that speak to you over and over, like a mantra meditation. It's very powerful.
Wow. Thank you. That's amazing. From Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter. Wow. Yeah. Also, Ki Ata Imadi, right? Like exactly like you said, Lo Ira Ra Ki Ata Imadi. It's still Ra, right? It's just, I'm not afraid of it because you're with me.
Correct. Right? Exactly. Which you have that piece in the second chapter. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. The Ketah. Beautiful piece. Yeah. From the woman, you know, that she says, I'd rather be in the dark with God than in the light. That's so powerful. Yeah. Such an important
idea. Thinking about that just recently on the Gemara about Ein Chavush Matir Atzmu Beis HaSurim, right? So the Gemara says that a prisoner can't free himself from jail.
Right.
And so that, and it invokes that to explain why Rabbi Yochanan was able to help someone when they were sick, but then when Rabbi Yochanan himself was sick, he needed someone else to help him. Why couldn't he help himself the same way he helped someone else? And so the Gemara explains, because a prisoner can't free himself from jail. I was thinking maybe it's because if you're freeing yourself from jail, then that's still jail because you're by yourself.
Wow. That's great. That's beautiful.
Right? The point is that the freedom is that somebody else is there with you.
Right. Beautiful.
Right? Which really is, you know, the outward focus like you're talking about.
Right. You need someone else to lift you up. Beautiful.
Right.
I have to quote that from you also. Okay, that's you. Also, Lee, that's your father. Okay. All right. We'll do.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To have this conversation with you. Thank you for all the insight and wisdom.
Pleasure. Bahatzlacha Rabba. Continue your Avodas HaKodesh.
Thank you.
All right.
So much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please follow us on WhatsApp, YouTube, or Instagram. All our podcast series can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with questions, comments, or suggestions, or to be added to our WhatsApp groups. You can reach us through email using yakov.attached@gmail.com or on WhatsApp at 773-888-2413.